I'm here with Lama Paul Dendroma, and for our listeners, the way she spells it, Lama, L-A-M-A, Paulden, P-A-L-D-E-N, Droma, D-R-O-L-M-A. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, lamapaulden.org, O-R-G. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. And she's the author of Love on Every Breath, Tonglen Meditation for Transforming Pain into Joy. And Lama Paulden, I'd love for you to say something about meditation and why it's important, and help us understand our motivation for meditation and why it's important to tap into the right motivation.
Well, our motivation, and this is really has to do with step three in the book, is to benefit ourselves and all other beings throughout time and space. And the meditation is important because it helps us to bring peace to our minds and peace to our hearts. And it also helps us begin to see our thoughts and which thoughts we should go with and which thoughts we shouldn't go with. And it helps us actually in the final analysis to uncover the pure being of who we truly are, our true nature, our awakened self. So there's so many benefits of meditation, and then ultimately it brings us to see who are we truly.
So we might tap into it. Many of us might tap into it. So for personal improvement, self-improvement, or for to reduce stress, or to retreat from the chaos of the world. And that may get us into it, but you're saying the bigger motivation that underneath all of that, or the foundational motivation, is for the helping others.
Yeah, for really to transform and liberate our own consciousness and that of all beings, so that as we work on transforming and liberating our own consciousness and discovering who we truly are and the nature of reality, which is so much more magnificent than we normally think, then that affects consciousness for all of us. And also, in the Tibetan Buddhist path, every part of our spiritual path is on behalf of not only ourselves, but all beings, because it's recognizing we are inseparable and that the best way forward for all of us is to consider the whole of us.
And I'm just thinking also in the Buddhist thought, it recognizes our innate qualities are that of goodness. And this is a little bit different from the Christian doctrine that we are born in sin. And I would love for you to talk about that difference in sort of view of who we are as human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the late 80s and into the 90s, I started thinking about this, and it was one of those things where other people started thinking about it at the same time, because we noticed that in the West, there has been a lot of self-hatred and self-criticism and this berating and constant scolding of the self. And for me, living in the Himalayas and being around those people, it was very different. And the teachings of Buddhism is that we're basically okay, but we're just a little bit dirty and we need to clean up. And who we truly are is this incredibly magnificent, luminous, pure, crystal-like being, a really magnificent being. And that we are primordially pure. We already are awake, but we don't recognize it. And the path to recognizing and embodying that is the cleaning up of the crystal. And so this is very different than that we're born in sin, because what I came to feel, and other people have come to feel this, is that this doctrine of original sin, even if you never heard it in your life and you're a Westerner born in the West, born in a Christian or Judaic Abrahamic culture, it's very deep in the psyche that there is something wrong with me. At the core of who I am, there's something wrong. I screwed up somehow, somewhere. So this feeling of like there's something wrong with me is very, very deep in the Western psyche. And I feel that it goes back to this teaching. And I think that people like, in modern times have tried to, like Matthew Fox, have tried to give a different interpretation of that teaching, which I think is really helpful. But yes, so that's the deal. So I think that it's very important for us to actually learn to love the self and to realize, no, we can't be mean in one area and kind in another. It doesn't add up.
I'm going to go back to your childhood. There was something when you grew up in the Episcopal Church and you loved your church and you had this, I will call it a spiritual enthusiasm. It was natural to you in some way. You just were in touch with it in some way. Everything was going fine until you were about 7 years old and something happened to you. And I'd love for you to share that story and tell our listeners what you did for the practice you did as a child.
Yes. So I put this in the book because it's a spontaneous thing that came to me that's very much like what this Tibetan Buddhist meditation is about. And so I was with my best friend across the street from my house, and we were in the bedroom of her 15-year-old brother, and we were both seven. And all of a sudden, he asked us to pull down our pants, and, you know, we were just innocent and clueless, and we did. And then he put his hand right on my vulva. And as soon as that happened, I felt, that's wrong. That's something wrong. And I pulled up my pants, and I ran home. And then after that, I felt like something had stained me, or like there was something wrong or dirty on me. I felt like that. And I felt that. And somehow I got the idea inside myself to call upon Jesus. And so every night before I went to bed, I called upon Jesus. I would imagine him there in front of me like a being of light. And then I would pray to him to purify me, to clean off this feeling of being stained or somehow damaged. And then I would see that, you know, from him would come this light inside of me that was his love, his healing energy, and that white light would fill me. And so I did that every night. And after I did a long time, which seemed to me at seven, about a year, I don't really know how long it was, but it seemed like I'd been doing it a year, every night before bed. And then I realized all of a sudden I felt completely pure. I no longer felt that sort of stain or that feeling of being dirty or something. It was completely gone, and I felt back to normal how I was before and just really good in myself. And so I thank Jesus very, very much for being with me and helping me. And then it was really a very profound healing for me as a child.
And that's really almost like experiencing Tonglin as a child. And I want to say, like, I can remember myself as a child and the prayer that I would do every night. I would do, "Now I lay me down to sleep" prayer. But at the end of that prayer, even as a little tiny little girl, I would say, "And God bless." And I'd say, "Mother and Daddy and my sister and brothers." And then I would go out and say, "And all the people in my neighborhood," and I'd finally get out to all the people in the world. I just kept going and going. And it was so natural to me.
And I think it's very natural, the love of a child for others, yeah.
And that's been proven in research that I think that you mentioned that even a 3-year-old has been able to do this practice.
Yeah, I was so delighted that at one point years ago, one of my students brought her goddaughter. And the goddaughter was 3 years old, and she was distressed about seeing other kids suffer on the playground, like maybe some kid was being mean to them and they were in pain. Or she was also felt really bad when she saw dead animals, like on the freeway. So she wanted to know if there was a meditation she could do, this little 3-year-old, to work with this, because she felt distressed. And she also really wanted to help these
other beings. Did she use the word meditation, or what did she
I can't remember remember the word, but she thought I could teach her something,
she knew
a spiritual practice, something.
She knew.
Think she actually knew. She had been taught a little bit about meditation by her parents.
Okay. She had witnessed them in some way.
Yes, her parents meditated, and she knew about it. So she asked me that, so I explained like an on-the-spot, simple version of the practice to her of this Tonglen, of the love on every breath, and she got it, and she was happy and thanked me. And then she came back like 6 or 7 weeks later and said she felt much better and it was really working. So anyone can learn to do this.
And I'm thinking, too, as we practice this and it becomes part of our ritual, so to speak, it just becomes part of us and we really incorporate it into our being, then it's available. Like in a moment. And you've had a moment like that, I think a car accident at some point, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So that's the beauty of this meditation is that once you're familiar with it, any of the steps can be used anytime, just in an instant. So say, for example, the first step is resting in open awareness. Say I just notice I'm very agitated. I can just let go in an instant and rest in open awareness because I familiarize myself with letting go and resting like that. And then it's like a reset button on my entire physical and mental being. And also, you know, any of those steps can be used like that and it becomes very, very powerful. Like the step three of bodhicitta of engaging in our lives in order to benefit ourselves and all others. I was recently teaching this meditation at San Quentin, and some of the inmates that have been studying with my friend who's a chaplain there, that's what they do. Like they go through their day and they think, well, now that I'm exercising, may this benefit all beings. Now that I'm studying this spiritual text, may it benefit all beings. And they are turning, they have turned around their minds into wanting everything they do to be a benefit to others. And that's like so powerful and so beautiful. I, you know, working with some of these guys at San Quentin, it's like you could just see that they've totally transformed their whole way of life and thinking, and it's brought them so much joy.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. And I'm also thinking of, as you say, we can just tap into it in a moment. And when we're feeling that agitation, we're feeling anxious, or and we notice that. And you say, love on every breath, then we just connect our breath with that heart center. It's not watching our breath, but connecting the
breath. Exactly. And I make a distinction about that, that it's not... that in this practice, we're becoming one with the breath. So we breathe in the suffering. It's completely transformed by the lightning bolt of true nature, of awake presence. And then on the out-breath, that love and healing energy is sent out to others or to ourselves or to all of us. And so that's the love on every breath, the breathing in, the transformation, and then the sending out of the healing.
And it can be done in just that moment. I'm here with Lama Paldon Drolma, and she is the author of Love on Every Breath, Tonglen Meditation for Transforming Pain into Joy. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Lama Paldon Drolma, and she's the author of Love on Every Breath, as well as the founder of the Sukha Siddha Foundation in Northern California, in Marin County in Northern California. It's a Tibetan Buddhist center. And Lama Paldon, I'm thinking when we're talking about like that instant that we can just go into this and in the moment that on the spot, so to speak, you talk about, I'm thinking of a story that was once told by Stephen Levine, the beautiful teacher who taught many workshops on death and dying, mm-hmm. and did a book, mm-hmm. A Year to Live. And he's passed in transition, but his teachings all stay with us even now. And he tells a story of somebody doing a prayer on the freeway at an accident. Do you remember that story?
I do. Yeah, it was an amazing story. And he told about how there was a car accident that was quite bad, and somebody in a car passing that saw it happen and saw that it was very serious started doing mantras, Om Mani Padme Hum, which is the mantra of compassion and is the mantra of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion, which is part of this meditation as well. So the person started saying this mantra of compassion for whoever was suffering in the accident. So, and then they drove by and continued. And then later, apparently, the person in the accident, you know, when you are in a great shock, sometimes people have the experience of leaving their body. And this person in the impact left their body, was still conscious, and felt the mantra and heard it, actually. And how this happens, we have no way of knowing. But they were really appreciative because they felt the power of the mantra helping them in that moment. And so then later when they healed, they, and actually they had, I think, memorized the license plate of this car that they could tell where the mantra was coming from, all this in a split instant when they're out of their body in the accident. And, you know, time slows down in those situations. So later they recovered, and the story was that they had researched whose license plate is this so that they could go thank the person for doing those mantras for them because they had felt them to be so helpful. And they did find the person. So Stephen Levine had told this incredibly beautiful story about that. So, you know, I talk about this story as a way of saying that everything we do makes a difference, whether anybody even knows or not. You know, whether we're doing internally or externally, our actions matter and they can be a benefit.
So that's a powerful story, and it's really something that does tell us we never know the effect that we are having, and just to do it anyway.
Right. And to do it anyway fills us with love. And so we become transformed. We become vessels of love, which brings us joy and contentment and peace. And then, you know, whatever we can do is what we can do. You know, I mean, nobody can fix this whole mess that we find ourselves in. But many, many, many people are wanting to contribute to do something beneficial. And that all adds up.
You mentioned mantra. So I'd like to ask you the importance of mantra, of knowing a mantra or speaking a mantra, or does it have to be in Tibetan, or talk about mantra?
Well, it doesn't have to be in Sanskrit or Tibetan or Hebrew or whatever, but the ancient spiritual languages, including like Hebrew and Sanskrit and Tibetan and various other ones, when the mantras were given in that language, the sounds themselves have an effect subtly in our mind-body system. So those are particularly powerful because not only do the words mean something, and those mantras are like the email address of certain divine or awakened qualities or certain embodiments of awakened presence. So Those mantras are both like the easy access, the instant email to connect with certain awakened beings or divine beings, and also with those qualities that those beings embody, like wisdom or love or strength or courage. But also, mantras in English can be very powerful too. And really, mantras help our minds concentrate, which brings us to calm abiding. So they're good. That's like point number one. But they also are transformational for our consciousness. And that's where they really come into their true efficacy.
I remember years ago working with Swami Radha, who worked with Yogananda. She was in Canada. And I remember her, she said, the importance of tapping into a mantra like Om Mani Padme Om, something like that, is that so many thousands and millions of people have chanted that over centuries. And she said, you're tapping into that field of energy that of so many others. So it's not like a modern sort of thing, but something that has what Rupert Sheldrake, the biologist, might say is a morphic genetic field that goes along with such a mantra.
My teacher said something to me like that once too, that when we're saying the mantras that for hundreds or thousands of years beings have said, people have said these mantras, and that many beings have awakened saying these mantras. So the power of their awakening comes into us, is transmitted to us through the mantra as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. I want to go back just briefly back to something we started the program with, and that was about self-love. And you tell a story that really resonated with me because it was a moment when you released yourself into allowing yourself to be helped by another. And this was when you were in Sikkim and you had pneumonia. And that story really moved me.
Yeah, and, you know, I was young and we didn't think very seriously about things like having pneumonia, you know, I mean. So there I was in Sikkim in the monastery of Karmapa. I was actually in a house right next to the wall of the monastery with a Tibetan family, very, very primitive refugee conditions. But I was fine, I thought. I was just stayed in my room and they fed me and I just stayed in there and waited till I got better. But after a month had passed, I had become friendly with the Bhutanese royal family, and there were two of the Bhutanese royal grandmothers living there and kind of in semi-retreat at Karmapa's monastery in Sikkim. They were, you know, elderly by that point. And one of them in particular I knew well. And in Bhutan, I was used to sometimes having a bath at the princess's house because a warm bath was not easy to come by in Bhutan. So they had invited me to have a bath at their house when I wanted to. So after a month, I thought it'd really be nice to have a warm, hot bath. Here I am way in the mountains in the foothills of the Himalayas and hadn't had a bath in a month, just a sponge bath. So I walked up to their house and just asked, you know, if I could use a bathtub or whatever. And they opened the door, one of the royal grandmothers and one of her daughters, and they looked at me with such utter compassion that I just simply burst into tears because I was halfway around the world from home. I was a young woman. And all of a sudden, you know, I was soldiering on fine, but their compassion just touched me so deeply that I just burst into tears. And I let it in, and they were so concerned about me because over there, nobody cries. Like, they don't burst into tears. They don't show tears. So for them to see me crying, for them was the cause of, like, great alarm. Like, oh my gosh, we got to do something this instant. So they sprang into action to help me. And yeah, in that moment, it was just the profound appreciation for someone else's compassion and how deeply that touched me.
And you carry that with you now. don't you? I mean, it never really quite leaves you. There, it opens something.
I think
so. What does it
open? I think, you know, when we allow love in from others, it connects our hearts together and it connects all of us to something much bigger than we are. And that's love on a bigger scale, you know, way bigger than we are. Like the basic fundamental goodness of human beings and how we care for each other. You know, like in emergencies when all of a sudden people who don't even know these people are like really going, you know, against great odds to save people. To me, this demonstrates the fundamental basic goodness of humanity and our basic kindness, which, as you alluded to, research is now beginning to prove that this fundamental urge toward kindness, toward wishing the best for each other, really is in our makeup.
Well, Love of Holden, I want to thank you so much for being part of New Dimensions today and giving us your loving compassion. And I want to let our listeners know that she is the author of Love on Every Breath, Tonglen Meditation for Transforming Pain into Joy. And if you want to know more about her work and her center, the Sukha City Foundation, which is in Northern California, you can go to her website, lamapalden.org, O-R-G, and she spells her name LamaPalden, lamapalden.org. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3684.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. This program was recorded at Strawberry Hill Productions, a full-service podcast production studio in Novato, California. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of a community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. and Bark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at EmbarkSustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at EmbarkSustain.